Discover the life-changing benefits of Meow Greens for your cat. Ever see your cat slowing down or having health issues and wonder, what can I do to make them better? Well, my friend, add Meow Greens to your cat's food for 90 days, and I guarantee you'll see changes that will amaze you. Greetings, I'm naturopathic Dr. Dennis Black, inventor of Meow Greens, and I invite you to take the Meow Greens 90-Day Challenge. In the first 30 days, you'll see shinier coats and increased energy. By day 60, your cat will have a stronger immune system, less shedding, improved joint function, all due to the live nutrients that you've added to their diet. And at 90 days, they're going to have better digestion, reduced inflammation, improved heart health, and you may even have reduced their cancer risk. Fetch a free Jumpstart trial bag for your cat today. Go to trymeowgreens.com. Use promo code TRYMEOW. That's try M-E-O-W. You discover the shipping. You don't have to change your cat's food to improve your cat's health. Just add a packet of Meow Greens.
This podcast contains explicit content and is not suitable for all ages. Listener discretion is advised.
Ever notice your dog slowing down and having health issues and wonder, what can I do to make them better? Well, my friend, add Rough Greens to your dog's food for 90 days, and I guarantee you'll see changes that will amaze you. Greetings, naturopathic Dr. Dennis Black, inventor of Rough Greens here, and I invite you to give your pup the Rough Greens 90-Day Challenge. In the first 30 days, you'll see shinier coats and increased energy. By day 60, your dog will have a stronger immune system, less shedding, improved joint function, all due to the live nutrients that you've added to their diet. And at 90 days, better digestion, reduced inflammation, improved heart health, and you may even have reduced their cancer risk. Fetch your dog a free Jumpstart trial bag today. Go to tryroughgreens.com. Use promo code TRYRUFF. That's TRYRUFF. Go to tryroughgreens.com. Use promo code TRYRUFF. You discover the shipping. You don't have to change your dog's food to improve your dog's health. Just add a scoop of Rough Greens.
Welcome back to Always the Last to Know. I'm Ash.
I'm Katie.
Oh, I'm Katie.
Oh, you know, got a headache today. I started disassociating at some of the knickknacks around my room. More specifically, Hosier's mouth.
Oh, nice.
Got distracted. Yeah, I have a headache. It's the day after Thanksgiving. That's about all I got.
Getting to see the disruptions in the Macy's Day Parade was very fucking satisfying.
Oh, it was amazing.
I'm so proud of everyone.
It was a beautiful thing to see. Of course, didn't see it on TV because they wouldn't show that.
They were trying so hard to keep that out.
Yeah.
Didn't you say you were watching NBC and they just had the sound off and they were just talking about what was going on?
Their mics were definitely louder than everything else because I wasn't hearing. I wasn't hearing
anything.
Yeah.
Well, I'm proud of everyone who did that. And at parades, like across the country, I've been seeing on TikTok.
Oh, yeah. Everywhere. It's amazing.
I don't really have much of an update. I don't really got much going on. I do have for us today, though, a pretty long episode, longer than usual. Why don't we just get into it?
Discover the life-changing benefits of Meow Greens for your cat. Ever see your cat slowing down or having health issues and wonder, what can I do to make them better? Well, my friend, add Meow Greens to your cat's food for 90 days, and I guarantee you'll see changes that will amaze you. Greetings, I'm naturopathic Dr. Dennis Black, inventor of Meow Greens, and I invite you to take the Meow Greens 90-Day Challenge. In the first 30 days, you'll see shinier coats and increased energy. By day 60, your cat will have a stronger immune system, less shedding, improved joint function, all due to the live nutrients that you've added to their diet. And at 90 days, they're going to have better digestion, reduced inflammation, improved heart health, and you may even have reduced their cancer risk. Fetch a free Jumpstart trial bag for your cat today. Go to trymeowgreens.com. Use promo code TRYMEOW. That's try M-E-O-W. You discover the shipping. You don't have to change your cat's food to improve your cat's health. Just add a packet of Meow Greens.
This week, we have a special Dream Maker patron-picked episode. Thank you to Bailey B, who sent us this episode topic.
Bailey, you're hilarious. I love every time you message me. It's the best.
Bailey wanted to hear us talk about secret cities. I'll be so honest with y'all. Once I started doing my notes, I was like, oh, this is truly an Always the Last to Know episode because I have no idea about any of this shit. Nothing, nada, zero. Dude, don't you just love when this happens?
When people give me a new rabbit hole to go in, I'm just like, yes, feet first, head first, let's fucking go. It's the best thing ever.
Yes, let's learn together. I'm very excited. I do want to add that while I'm definitely fascinated by what we're about to talk about, I think war is unnecessary and weapons of mass destruction are dumb and unnecessary. So yeah, just want to preface it with that.
Yeah. Throwing that out there in case people didn't know by now.
With that being said, let's dive into the secret cities that were created in the US surrounding the creation of the atomic bomb.
Fuck yeah. This is not where I thought we were going.
Ooh,
fuck
yeah. Where did you think we were going?
I thought we were going underground, secret city, conspiracy, lizard people sort of thing.
I'll leave that stuff for you.
You never know. Although I am not going to cover lizard people because that does have anti-Semitic, legitimately anti-Semitic roots.
Yeah, hard pass on that.
No thanks.
Back in World War II, in 1938 specifically, there were two German scientists who were the first people to split a uranium atom successfully. Of course, this was an absolutely wild scientific breakthrough, especially back then, so people were taking notice. When word of this reached the US and Europe, they were like, oh fuck, Germany is going to make an atomic bomb. We need to beat them to it.
So wild how often the US just ends up doing ridiculous shit because they're worried that someone else might do it first.
Yeah, you are so fucking paranoid. Jesus, get therapy.
Yes.
In August of 1939, Albert Einstein sent a letter to President FDR warning him that Nazi Germany may have already started to work on the creation of the atom bomb. May have. Fucking Albert. FDR then created the Advisory Committee on Uranium, a team of, quote, scientists and military officials tasked with researching uranium's potential role as a weapon. Based on the committee's findings, the U.S. government started funding research by Enrico Fermi and Leo Szilard at Columbia University, which was focused on radioactive isotope separation, also known as uranium enrichment, and nuclear chain reactions. End quote. That's from history.com. Damn. Of course, there were delays, as there always are with government involvement. So the project known as the Manhattan Project, which I definitely recognized the name of that. I've heard of it. It didn't begin until 1942.
The inflection in which you went, I heard of it. It was
something.
It was. That was a choice. Quote my professor.
Quote, the advisory committee on uranium's name was changed in 1940 to the National Defense Research Committee before finally being renamed the Office of Scientific Research and Development in 1941. The Army Corps of Engineers joined the OSRD in 1942 with President Roosevelt's approval, and the project officially morphed into a military initiative with scientists serving in a supporting role. The OSRD formed the Manhattan Engineer District in 1942 and based it in the New York City borough of the same name. End quote. U.S. Army General Leslie R. Groves was put in charge of managing the Manhattan Project. It was at this time that the search for scientists and personnel, as well as the locations for the cities, began. Before we get into the creation of the cities, I want to quickly talk about the process of convincing the scientists to work on the project. And this is where theoretical physicist J. Robert Oppenheimer, which I'm sure everybody recognizes now because of the movie that just came out.
That's a real person? I heard someone say, and I was like, you're about to learn so much fucked up shit.
It's about to be absolutely terrible.
Like, imagine, and this is not even like speaking down on someone, like imagine not knowing that, like,
and then learning that information.
Imagine like being an adult and being able to like fully comprehend what all of that means and learning that. I genuinely hope that you have a support system scheduled for soon, because holy fuck.
Yikes. Like, what a doozy.
Yeah. That's about to be so much.
Yeah. I mean, this was like kind of crazy doing this research for this. Of course, I know about the atom bomb and everything, but I did not know about the creation of these cities. And it's all like really fucking like weirdly dystopian.
Yeah.
Oppenheimer was already working on the concept of nuclear fission when he was named director of the Los Alamos Laboratory, which we will get to in a minute. To convince people to work on a top secret project without even actually telling them what the fuck is going on first, they needed a really good like salesman to pitch the project to scientists and their families. Oppenheimer was that salesman. There's one video that I was watching from PBS, and they have a lot of photos of Oppenheimer in what looks like probably like functions, maybe functions with other scientists and everything, where it looks like he is kind of like working the room and schmoozing and trying to convince people to like join this project, but he's got to be super secretive about it. So he had the ability to sell people on the job without having to give much detail. Eventually, there were thousands of people that were recruited to work on the atomic bomb. Some of the most notable people and people that I found PBS interviews with who were part of the project were Hal Bell, an aeronautical engineer, and Lily Horneg and her husband Don, and they were scientists. They spoke in their PBS interviews about the like cryptic conversations with military officials that were in charge of the project. Essentially, the conversation was like, we have an elite job for you, but we only take volunteers. And Hal was like, can you please elaborate? And the response was basically, we can't. Like, how do you decide to join a secret military project when they won't tell you anything about it?
It's one of a kind, just for you. But what happens? It's an adventure. Like, fuck, no, I need to know what I'm doing, please.
Right. Lily said that Don was asked, how would you like another job? And he said he wanted to know more before saying yes. And he was basically told that they couldn't tell him more. They even asked if they could know where the location would be that they were going to be doing this job. And the military would not even give them that. They wouldn't tell them regional. They wouldn't even say like north, south, east, west of the country. So it was just like no information at all. They asked what they would be doing, and they were again told that that information could not be shared. Both Bell and Horneg expressed in their interviews that they weren't willing to risk their futures for zero information about the jobs. Horneg said that they were essentially told, you know, those posters of Uncle Sam saying, I want you, that's what's happening here. And based off of like the level of American nationalism back then, during a world war, it was enough to convince them that they were being a patriotic American by taking this secret government job. And then like within days of saying yes, they were shipped off to the cities.
Wow.
Isn't that fucking crazy?
What the fuck?
And this like whole secrecy of the project is something that is prevalent the entire time. Like it's a major part of the way that they function in these cities. There were people working on the project that lived in the cities, but even the civilians had no idea of the full spectrum of what was taking place. And you weren't allowed to talk about it. Anyone under the age of 12 had to wear an ID badge. I just like really want to drive home the point of the secrecy. It's such a big part of it. So now we're going to move on to how the locations for the cities were chosen. There were three secret cities: Los Alamos, New Mexico, Oak Ridge, Tennessee, and Richland, Washington. These cities were populated by a mix of military and civilian employees and personnel. The locations needed to be remote due to the need for a high level of secrecy and security. We're going to start with Oak Ridge. Oak Ridge, Tennessee was chosen for its location within a series of hills and valleys between the Appalachian Mountains and the Cumberland Plateau, and it was already sparsely populated. The land was acquired in 1942, 55,000 acres for $3.5 million, and they displaced about 1,000 families that had already resided on the land. They ended up creating different production plants at this location, so gaseous diffusion, pile, centrifuge, and electromagnetic. This location being landlocked was a purposeful choice, and it was to help prevent an air attack from Germany or Japan. This is the city that Hal was sent to. This city essentially boomed overnight from farmland to like a fully functioning city.
What the fuck?
It's good, bro. It's fucking crazy. So according to Explore Oak Ridge, quote, throughout the war, Oak Ridge was protected by guarded gates and workers at the plants were sworn to secrecy. Few people in town were aware that the military was pursuing an atomic bomb on site. They only knew information relevant to their specific job duties. And by 1945, the population grew to 75,000 people. Yeah. It was like a whole ass city.
What the fuck?
A whole ass city for working on part of an atomic bomb. And the people, and then they don't know. And you're not allowed to talk about it.
Wow.
Now for the needs of processing plutonium. They needed a large area with few people and access to water and power. The Pacific Northwest fits that criteria. They used the Columbia River to cool their reactors and used the Grand Coulee Dam on the Columbia River as a source of hydroelectric power. In 1943, the 780 square miles of land was acquired for $5.1 million, displacing a little less than 100 residents who had already been living in the area. I hate that people had to be displaced for this.
Seriously.
The main groups working in this town were Hanford Engineer Works and DuPont.
Damn.
I saw that the residents of Richland would swim down river from the plutonium plant and that there were like reported warm spots in the water.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah. According to the National Park Service, quote, we now know that those warm spots were likely linked to water used to cool the uranium slugs in the B reactor being pumped back into the Columbia River, end quote. Which feels like,
fuck,
not safe to be swimming in, but like, what do I know? Because also, according to the National Park Service, quote, doctors regularly reassured residents that the plutonium being produced at Hanford was safely contained at the site and that plutonium production was less dangerous to their health than their own home appliances or medical x-rays, end quote. And I don't know. It feels weird. It doesn't sit right with me.
Nope, doesn't feel good.
It feels like a lie. Yeah. It feels like a lie.
Doesn't feel good.
Aside from that, the population boomed from 250 people to 15,000 by 1945. And looking at photos of Richland, dude, it literally looks like the quintessential depiction of American suburban neighborhoods in the 40s. Like, very cookie cutter, you know? Yeah. There were grocery stores and schools for the kids and movie theaters and shit. Like, everything that you'd find in a little city. They got their supplies from, like, nearby farms and dairy farms and had local gardens. They caught fish in the river, which feels weird. Their schools were also very well run and they had high quality educations, which like shouldn't be surprising considering the amount of scientists that live there. It's like that town Eureka in that show Eureka.
Yes, I fucking love that show.
Yeah. Finally, we have Los Alamos, New Mexico. This was the location of the laboratory where the weapons were designed and a research facility. There was only one phone line to reach the outside world, and it was located on the top of an isolated mesa about 200 miles from the international border. They purchased the property of like a former boys' school, like a boys' boarding school that was at the top of this mesa. So they bought that property to use. It was called the Los Alamos Ranch School, and it had the space to house 265 residents, including Oppenheimer. This is where he worked.
Holy shit.
On top of the mesa, they had a panoramic view of the area, and that was obviously chosen for security and secrecy.
Mm-hmm.
The property was purchased for $440,000 in 1942, and the site was referred to as Site Y, or the Hill. And this was also where Lily and Don were sent. The population by 1945 had actually grown to 6,000, which is like crazy. They built like a whole city out in the fucking like western desert. Like,
seriously.
Crazy. Especially because the living conditions at Los Alamos were very rough. One of the scientists at the site, Hugh Bradner, actually had a video camera and he made home movies during his family's time there, which is like fucking crazy. You get this like super rare glimpse into what life was really like there, but it's also like insane that they allowed it to exist.
Yeah.
You have so much secrecy and you're like so locked down, but this dude has a fucking video camera. There's like clips clips that I found from PBS of some of it. So I'll try to find a way to like share it, but he's just making home videos.
Holy shit.
I'm shocked that they let the tapes exist.
Seriously.
Author and historian Martin Sherwin describes the living conditions as rough Western and said you could turn on the water tap and worms were as likely to come out as water was, end quote. On the other hand, though, he said that there were parties where the punch was spiked with 100% lab-grade alcohol, because of course scientists would do that, and that Oppenheimer was a fantastic lab leader. It became exciting to be there. Wild, really. What? Imagine partying on 100% lab-grade alcohol while you're at a remote location to create an atomic bomb.
What the fuck?
So I understand people need to, like, let loose of their stress, but this is like, what?
I would just be, like, too anxious.
And it's like, okay, did they fully, like, you're at this place with Oppenheimer, like, this is where you're doing the bulk of the research. Like, I understand people are contained to their certain projects, but like, do you have an idea of like what the fuck is going on?
Yeah.
I think there at each location was like, you know, a small amount of people who knew what the fuck was going on, but the majority people didn't. And it's like, oh, was this a way to like try to normalize things by having these parties?
Yeah.
So people won't feel so bad. Like, I don't know. It's fucking crazy.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't really think about it like that.
Yeah. Absolutely wild, dude. And the average age of people at Los Alamos was 25.
Oh.
Like, to think that the people in charge of creating a weapon of mass destruction during a world war are 25. I don't think at 25 I would have fully, like, grasped the seriousness of what we were working towards, especially if you didn't know.
No, because our brains weren't fully developed. This is fucking me up.
I also want to mention that most of the women at Los Alamos worked as mostly typists or machine operators, but out of the 400 scientists at Los Alamos, only 10 were women. In her interview with PBS, Lily did elaborate on that. They said, how fast do you type? And I said, I don't type. And they said, well, what makes you think you can have a job? I said, I'm a chemist with a master's degree and a year of work experience. And eventually, they turned up a job in the chemistry division. So they took some women, but they made it very clear that, you know, we were not top drawer. Bro, and she like said it like that too. I was like, damn. I'm a chemist with a master's degree.
What a clapback.
The first thing that is drilled into the minds of everyone at each location is the importance of secrecy. There it is again. The government and military were basically like, you get enough information to do the job we've assigned you and nothing more. Oh, and don't talk about it with anyone, not even your family. A former resident of Richland said, quote, the first thing that you did in any class was you couldn't tell the class what your dad did, but you could tell what state you were from, end quote. Sandra Lipinski, whose father worked in Richland, said, we were never allowed to ask dad what he did, where he worked, hours of his work, anything. Her recollection was common among the children of employees. They also had certain words that were not allowed to be spoken. You couldn't say anything about bombs, atoms, or uranium. Hal mentions in his interview that his wife, White, literally had no idea what he was working on.
What the fuck?
And like, she lives there with him. When you look at photographs of these cities, especially Oak Ridge and Richland, because they were much more like a city than New Mexico was,
mm-hmm.
you get a very weirdly like nostalgic vibe. It also really reminds me of the game Fallout.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Yeah, with like secrecy and atomic paraphernalia and like propaganda on signs and buildings. Martin Muller, the senior curator of the Secret Cities, the Architecture and Plan of the Manhattan Project exhibition at the National Building Museum in Washington said, quote, at first glance, they seem like very normal American communities. But then, before long, you start to see things that are strange in a variety of ways, sometimes humorous. One example that he mentions, driving by the main hotel in Oak Ridge and seeing that the bar and lounge there is called the Reactor Room, starting to see these nuclear symbols on seemingly random buildings around the place, but also coming to understand that these were not just typical communities that grew up in a haphazard fashion, that there was a hand of design there even at the beginning of their existence, end quote. There's a sign in Oak Ridge with the, you know, those like hear no evil, see no evil, speak no evil, like monkeys?
Yes.
Okay. So it's that on a sign. It's like a billboard. And atop the billboard is a picture of Uncle Sam with his hat off to the side and he's rolling up his sleeves. It's like so overly masculine. And then over the monkeys, it says, "What you see here, what you do here, what you hear here, when you leave here, let it stay here." Bro, it's crazy looking.
What the fuck? That's uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. There's also another one with like, it looks like a photo of maybe like a military member, like in fatigues and the hat. And he's like pointing at himself, like with his thumb. And it says, "Who, me? Yes, you. Keep mum about this job." Weird. And stuff like that is in all the cities. There's a sign in Richland that says, "Loose talk, a chain reaction for espionage. Secrecy was the name of the game and the government and military were playing it hard."
A chain reaction for espionage.
The propaganda.
Oh, I want that on a shirt. That's cute.
Oh, yeah. Despite all of the secrecy, the people in these cities seemed to live relatively normal and happy lives. Creating housing in environments that were comfortable for the people who would be working there was of major importance to the project. They wanted people to feel at home and feel as though they were in a normal community. They built single-family homes and created the, you know, those typical cookie-cutter suburban neighborhoods. The importance of normalcy wasn't an experience for everyone living and working in the cities. Racism played a major part in how the living quarters for the Black residents of the communities were created. In Oak Ridge, they created a village area that was at the eastern end of the town. Apparently, the plan was to originally create the same type of housing as they had for their white counterparts, but that was quickly abandoned when the city started to grow a lot. And instead, they built these things called hutments. And dude, it was basically just plywood huts that were like haphazardly assembled. Like nothing lines up. It just looks fucked up, you know?
Yeah.
It like created these insane living conditions for, you know, the hot summertime. There's no airflow. There's no reprieve from how hot it's getting just inside of a plywood fucking box. And then in the wintertime, all they had was like a fucking basic ass stove to try to warm the place. It was horrible conditions.
Damn.
They also didn't give them indoor plumbing, so they had to use like a collective toilet facility. Married couples also were not allowed to live together in the village, and the residents there were routinely surveilled by security more so than the white residents. Many of those families had to live in those hutments until the early 1950s. In an unlikely twist, Muller said, quote, "In the post-war period, Oak Ridge, having now been settled as a place full of academics and very well-educated people otherwise, was one of the leaders in the desegregation movement in the South. In fact, two of the first public schools in the South to be desegregated were in Oak Ridge. Oak Ridge even threatened to secede from Tennessee in order to desegregate," end quote. There were so many people in these communities, like we said, that didn't know the full of extent of like what was going on, what they were working towards, and they didn't learn that until the night that the United States dropped the atomic bomb on Hiroshima in 1945. And bro, that was when they killed tens of thousands of people. It was then that the secret of the cities was public knowledge. Local newspapers ran the headlines, quote, "Atomic superbomb made at Oak Ridge strikes Japan," end quote. And, quote, "Oak Ridge attacks Japan, workers thrilled as atomic bomb secret breaks. Press and radio stories describe, quote, fantastically powerful weapon, expected to save many lives," end quote. Which is like, oof. Saving American lives while you just literally destroyed tens of thousands of innocent lives? And then what? The bomb after that was dropped on Nagasaki, those numbers changed to more than 100,000 people. These fucking sensationalized headlines, it's disturbing.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Despite there being those that were celebrating the bombing, there were those that deeply regretted what they had taken part in. Mary Lou Michelle, a typist in Oak Ridge, is quoted in the National Building Museum exhibition as saying, "The night that the news broke that the bombs had been dropped, there were joyous occasions in the streets, hugging and kissing and dancing and live music and singing that went on for hours and hours. But it bothered me to know that I, in my very small way, had participated in such a thing, and I sat in my dorm room and cried," end quote. Dude, like we said at the beginning, imagine what learning that information would do to a person's psyche. To learn that you, a typist, had been part of a community that created the fucking atom bomb and then killed hundreds of thousands of people.
Fuck me up.
It would destroy me forever.
Seriously.
After the war ended, the amount of patriotism and pride that was felt in these communities, especially in Oak Ridge and Richland, kept the residents living and working there. They had these events that were called Atomic Frontier Days, which were celebrations of the contributions that the towns had made in the dawn of the nuclear age and an optimism for new technology that could be created, this time for peaceful uses. The amount of propaganda that had to go into this project to keep the residents quiet is like fucking astounding looking back on it now.
Every step.
They masterminded the shit out of that.
Truly.
They had parades with floats that had the slogan, "We're here to stay." And they would have activities like tennis tournaments, a softball championship, kiddie races, water sports, and an air show. They held these Atomic Frontier Days from 1948 through the mid-60s, according to the National Park Service. It's like one thing if you had already only been using like nuclear studies and nuclear power to like do good in the world, but to like celebrate it after you've destroyed so many lives is fucking crazy.
Very American culture.
Very American culture. All three cities remained a part of the military-industrial complex, continuing their work on weapons and doing broader research. Today, Oak Ridge is heavily involved in the production of renewable energy. At least there's that. The atomic culture of the time survived as well. There are still theater companies and musical troupes to this day that formed during World War II and operate in these communities. The atomic culture included a type of gallows humor that was popular. This includes more of the atomic photos and signs that I mentioned earlier. At one of the most popular lunch spots in Oak Ridge, you can find pictures of mushroom clouds on the wall, and the logo of the high school in Richland includes a mushroom cloud. Yeah, dude.
Fuck?
According to Mueller, quote, "There are pictures of atomic symbols and so on, and I hasten to point out that that's not because the residents of these communities are callous. They realize the seriousness of the work that was done in those places during the war and afterwards during the Cold War. But it's kind of like doctor's humor in emergency rooms. They're somewhat notorious for being irreverent in their humor about medical conditions. It's how they deal with the seriousness of what they do," end quote. On the tiniest extent, I feel like I can slightly understand that because of my own work within the death industry, and like you really have to have a certain sense of humor to make it through working in a place like a funeral home and being surrounded by dead bodies all day. But I also highly hesitate to relate to that because the outcome of their work was the death of hundreds of thousands of people.
You and the doctors aren't actively working to find ways to kill people.
Mm-hmm.
It's very different.
Yeah. The celebration of all of that and like the continuation of having that kind of like propaganda up and celebrating the history of that is just so fucked up.
Wild.
I do think that after learning all of this information, I would firsthand like to go to those cities and like see these things and see like what kind of a situation is happening today, especially if these facilities are still in use. Like, what do the communities around this look like?
Mm-hmm.
To interact with some of those people, I think would be very interesting. I have to imagine it's a lot of descendants of the people who worked there.
Probably.
Especially the younger ones, you know?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. So I think that would be fucking fascinating. I'm also just like, yo, war is fucking dumb and bombs are dumb.
They're so dumb.
So dumb. Words are good, though. Diplomacy is good.
Whoa, you're being emotional.
Being too emotional.
Yikes.
But that is the, those are the secret cities of the Manhattan Project.
Holy shit.
I wasn't prepared for any of that information. I didn't know any of it. And I'm never going to forget any of it.
Yeah, that was a lot. I can't wait to re-listen to this when I don't have a headache.
Yes.
And I can like really take this in. Like I, yeah. At certain points I was like writing things down and I was like, oh, this is so much, Katie. Like you're going to be so upset. Like I'm going to wake up in the middle of the night without a headache and be like, oh my fucking God. I'm going to show up at your door at one in the morning
because something is incredibly wrong. Something is wrong. My mental state. well, Bailey, I don't want to say I hope you enjoyed this episode. That's fucking weirdly morbid. I hope that you found this informational and educational.
And that this topic was done justice. I feel like it was.
Thank you.
I think you did a great job.
Until next week. Bye.
Bye. For any photos related to today's episode, please go to our Instagram.
You can follow us on Instagram and TikTok at AL2KPodcast.
Like us on Facebook at Always the Last to Know Podcast.
If you have any questions, please email us at AL2KPodcast@gmail.com.
Please share, rate, and review us on your podcast listening app of choice.
Join our Patreon. You can find us at patreon.com/AL2KPodcast or click the link in our bio on social media.
Thanks for listening.